The ball of honey. This is one of the assigned readings. And this is really one of the the very important sutta in the canon. Of course, they all are, but this is, to me anyway, this is a really important one. And there's Ajahn Jeff's translation and in the Access the Insight, he gives a very good introduction to the sutta, because the Buddha is the sutta starts with the Buddha having a quiet meditation day in the forest and another Sakyan somebody is out there, and by the description in the suttas, and he's a kind of proud and obnoxious, and he asks a question in a kind of a offhand way, and then the Buddha and he asks him what his teaching is, and then the Buddha gives a reply in that he says his teaching, he teaches in such a way that one does not quarrel with anyone in the world, with its gods, Maras, all these princes and people, and then in such a way that the perceptions that perceptions are not underlying and the sensual pleasures and sort of freed from and being freed from craving, so that stopped the Sakyan in his tracks and he left. But it's interesting the Buddha pointing to non-conflict as a basis of his teaching, and that that by when one practices the teaching, then one doesn't end up in these areas of quarrels and quarrels and conflict, and that the mind doesn't end up obsessing with perplexity or sensuality and uncertainties. So that's a broad statement, and then he goes back to his monastery. He tells the monks of his encounter with this person, and then he a monk actually asks him, you know, how is it that these perceptions will no longer underlie the Blessed One or one who practices, and then the Buddha points to, he says, as to the source through which perceptions and notions born of mental proliferation beset one, then if there's nothing there to delight in, welcome, and hold to, then that's the end of underlying tendencies to desire, to aversion, to views, and to doubts, and that is the end of quarrels and brawls and disputes, recriminations, malicious words, and false speech. Here, these unwholesome states cease without remainder, and that's and he leaves it at that, and goes back to his dwelling place, and then the monks start talking. What was all that about? And what does that mean? And then they decide to go and talk with Venerable Bahakachana, who's the foremost in explaining at length teachings that have been given in brief. So then they go and ask him for clarification. And Mahakachana points to the perceptual process in the sense of, and dependent on how eye consciousness, so dependent on eye informs, eye consciousness arises. The meeting of the three is contact. With contact as a requisite condition, there is feeling. What one feels, one perceives. And that is, that one labels it in the mind. What one perceives, one thinks about. What one thinks about, one objectifies. Based on what a person objectifies, the perceptions and categories of objectification assail him or her with regard to the past, present, and future forms cognizable via the eye. And then he goes through the whole sense bases, ear, nose, tongue, body, and the mind, and pointing to this process of how we experience the sense bases and then proliferate from that. And that's there's an important aspect of that, and Joy pointed to that in the sense of the because there's a point in the process where we have our senses, there's sense contact, there's feelings, there's perception, but then there's the feeling of me perceiving. And then what one perceives, one thinks about. And it ceases to be, and then, say, what one thinks about, one then objectifies or proliferates around. And that's where it gets problematic. And so that simple step where we, all of a sudden, we are, we're within the realm of sense experience, quite pure experience, sight, sound, smell, taste. Then there's feeling, and then there's an association. And then the whole feeling of I starts to arise. And that's where one is beset, right? Because one, rather than being, a person who is experiencing, one is then being experienced upon, and that's problematic, because then we start to we move into. And there's other discourses, and Jeff does a good job in the introduction of pointing to that, in the sense of there's a few other discourses where the Buddha outlines this same process of the word that's used is papancha, and he, Ajahn Jeff himself, uses the word objectification, which is in your. Like that's, I then make something an object, and I separate myself. It's not, it's sort of me. There's me inside, and then there's the experience outside, and it's objectified. There's something outside, and I'm being acted upon. So there's this separation, and. The PTS, Polytech Society, dictionary immediately sort of, in its definition of papancha, immediately sort of says, this meaning is uncertain. So, I mean, it's quite good, because it that doesn't happen that often in the dictionary, or in any dictionary. There's a the the nature of the etymology has the feeling or the of expansion, diffuseness, manifoldness, so that's an aspect. And then they also in the dictionary they use something. It's like a obsession, where the mind can get obsessed with something. Bhikkhu Bodhi uses the word proliferation. Bhikkhu Nyanananda, who is a good scholar, and he's written a great, that's a long time ago, 40 years ago probably, on this whole subject of mental proliferation, and using this discourse as one of his jumping off point. So proliferation is a good word. Jeff, objectification, Yanamoli, diversification is a way, just a sort of, it starts spreading out, diversification. There's a Bhikkhu Bodhi also translate, because there's papancha, but there's also nipapancha, which is sort of without papancha. As these are characteristics of a great being, and he translates that, say, like nipapancha, one without papancha, as without complication. So how we complicate things is also a good extrapolation of that word, papancha. So, taking these experience of complication, proliferation, and recognizing that that's where we get into the realm of justification of our arguments, quarrels, disputes, accusations, tale-bearing, false speech. These are it starts spinning out, and it's already spinning out, and it has spun out. So that being able to recognize that in order to be able to say, okay, this is spinning out, what do? We can come back to our experience of the senses again. There's sight, sound, smell, taste, touch, just paying attention to that process, where we're not being pulled out of the realm of the senses. Doesn't mean we don't experience anything, but we're not complicating it. We're not objectifying it. We're not proliferating from that. So then it's just what it is. That gives us the opportunity to undermine the various habits that we yeah, that we get caught in. And that's the how the Buddha himself stated it. Say, if with regard to the cause whereby the perceptions and categories of objectification assail a person, there's nothing there to relish, welcome, or remain fastened to, then that is the end of the obsessions of passion, obsessions of resistance, obsessions of views, obsessions of uncertainty, obsessions of conceit, obsessions of passion for becoming, and the obsessions of ignorance. And those are all, say underlying defilements that take us to dukkha. So that and when that ceases, then the whole arguments, quarrels, disputes, accusations, that all ends, that all ceases without remainder. So the internal process that we need to be attending to in order to recognizing, well, where is this speech going? And speech, when I said the internal, that the inner dialogue, that internal, because we've always got this kind of commentary going on, and to question it, because we just because it's always there, we assume it's primacy. We assume that's how it's always going to be. That's the state of reality.